Welcome to episode 16 of the Sign Radio Show. In this episode, we try not to get nostalgic about nostalgia.
Welcome to the Sign Radio Show, episode 16 already. I'm Aki.
I'm Axel.
And I'm Zivoid.
And we're back once again.
Hello, everyone.
Yes.
So how is everybody doing?
All good, actually. Better than sometime before in those pandemic times. But so now we get to see people again and go to offices and stuff like that. So completely new worlds.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see because, I mean, people are starting to get back into work. We get back to the office on Monday on a very, very calm and quiet basis, actually, one day a week. But already the, let me say, people are being homesick way more now than they were just a while ago. So it's going to be interesting.
So you have 4 days off when you go one day to the office.
Well, yeah, 4 days off, basically working from home, yes.
No, but it's going to be different times. We have the same that we've opened at a half capacity, and that at voluntary basis, so you can still work from home. And we'll see how that goes. But I think things will never be the same again. And to talk about things that will never be the same again, let's talk about the past. This episode, our topic...
That was a nice bridge to the past.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to talk about nostalgia today as a topic, and both the good and the bad side, the crime and the joy, the joy and the crime of nostalgia. Because yeah, in the demo scene, and we're getting to a point that the demo scene has been around for 50 years, I guess, in a certain form, way, shape, or form.
And
When did you guys get to the demo scene, actually? Or first time you were confronted with a demo scene?
I think that was in 85 for me. I bumped into it. So, I mean, my beard tells the story. But I started to become active in late 86, early 87 or something like that.
On C64 then, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, I'm new school. I discovered the scene in the early 90s through Cracktros, and I think I first actively participated in 95 at a demo party. I went to parties. So I started going to parties in 95. So that's so for me, it's only been 26 years.
Right.
And you, Axel?
My brother got a C64 on Christmas because he's 8 years older than I am. So I got to the games and the Cracktros, of course, but I got my Amiga in 89, so I guess the first time I came across the scene was in 88 or 87, but didn't know what it was or anything, but in 89 I started making music, so that was, I guess, my time of entering the scene.
Yeah, so it's literally like, it's been around for a long time, and I assume, are you guys nostalgic to the machines? I guess so, because it's the machines you still probably use every once in a while.
I mean, to be honest, it's a quite interesting topic at this point in time as well, because lately, the last couple of months, there has been a lot of nostalgic posts with old demo party photos and everything like that on Facebook and other medias. And it's always interesting to be brought back into that mindset again, because, do you remember that party back in 1987? And then they actually have some photos from that party as well. So, because I went to my first party in 87, I want to feel like that again. And then on the other hand, you realize, okay, so today I'm 50 years old. Well, even though I love that old style thing, I wouldn't not want what I have today. So it's a sort of a mixed feeling for me, but I still enjoy the memories.
Yeah, and I think that's party thing is definitely because we can't go to any demo parties and people. I've been looking at Slangpung a lot, also because I miss everybody. And I haven't been to a real demo party in nearly 2 years. So in 2 years, I think, because Evoke has been. So, and Evoke 2019 was my last party. So it's that is that. thing to like remember, to reminiscing. I think it's indeed you grow up with a computer, as you both said. Like we were young, we got our machines. It's the thing you had free time, you made stuff, and it's that carefree time.
I think for me it was two phases. At one point, I think in, I don't know, early 2000s or something, I discovered that the Nectarine radio was existing. And I thought, oh, there are guys who are running a radio with old music that either was part of my history or other seniors' history. And that was like, and then I was having this deja vu of, oh God, this is, oh yeah, that's that track and that demo and all that. So, but, and then later on when we refounded Brainstorm, it was like being, starting an active part again. So it was a different kind of getting back in there, which I was neither certain would be welcomed or whatever, but you would at least get to participate again. And I think the participating aspect is something that, like now, like we started doing stuff in 2006 again. So now it's already nostalgic to think back to 2006. And that's kind of, that's kind of scary, because there's like two faces, like back then when you were young and when you were like active again in the scene, old young.
Did it? Because that's interesting, actually. So when you, because you were kind of out of the demo scene at that point, like you kind of left it behind, you started doing other things with your life. Rediscovering Nectarine, was that like that, like, oh, a warm bath of warm fuzzy feelings? Or
yeah, actually it was, and I think that's something that I think is essential to the nostalgia part, unless you have very bad memories of it, of your past. But to me it was always a phase of, I don't know, of the creativity of getting stuff done, of actually it's something that you were someone in a sense of that you were known to some extent, but I was not the like famous in the scene or some anything, but people knew me. But at the same time, later on, it didn't matter, or today it doesn't matter anymore what you did in the past, but still you have those people who are doing good stuff and who are probably more respected than others. I think that's something that I think is always part of the nostalgic thing, because if you did something in the past that you probably want to cling on to it,
yeah,
I think it's a bit of a risky.
It's a forming thing, I guess it's for everybody. Like it's a forming. That's why there's still like men our age playing with model trains. Also, that's very calming. I still more and more get that as well. Like say, as I was a kid, I was like, "What? It's so boring." And I go like, "Oh, wonderful." But I think it's that thing of like you it was your time, your free time at school. You had your computer. You were making stuff with your friends. It was very carefree. It was very nice. And you want to kind of capture that again. You kind of want to go back to that innocent time where you didn't have to worry about taxes. Yeah, and working in the office where you don't want to.
Exactly. And when you hear a certain song from a certain music comp, or you were at a certain party, then you exactly memorize the smell or the place or what. I mean, the smell, remembering smells is probably not the positive aspect, but still you can actually like literally feel the feeling of the hall or anything. Probably to you it was with past Breakpoint events or whatever, okay, I don't know, but
your skill was probably Breakpoint. Like I went to parts in the 90s.
No, but I think thinking back to a certain time when you were doing something, you probably still remember every detail of that, right?
So yeah, for no, us, it was a big impact. And indeed, as with the technology as well, I think that we have that computers were basic, literally running basic, and it was in certain ways easier to make demos because you had more time and there was less distraction. I guess it's also a thing that happened in the time now and focused on that. It was incredibly hard to make demos, but it was easy because everybody was mucking with computers. It was a very new time for computers. I think that's also why the demo scene is in that exact right moment in time. Where it could have never happened later or earlier, it needed to happen then. And I think that for a lot of people also that like, oh, before the internet and before progress and technology, but as if I said, we also don't want to let that go.
Yeah.
We love it.
I mean, that's a tough balance. And to be honest, the good side of, well, the internet and connectivity and everything like that is that you can actually refine old acquaintances and friends and stuff like that. I mean,
yes.
I realized the first party that I organized, I was main organizer, was the Eskilstuna Computer Entertainment Show in 1991. ECES in short.
I was there actually.
Yeah, you were?
Yeah. Later on, when it was called ECTS.
Yeah, that's a different one.
You guys are so old. Yeah. 1991, no, but... I was 10. I was 12. I was not allowed to go anywhere.
The big fun with that one, I mean, that was scary because it was 750 people there. And the organizational stuff to manage this, because everyone needed their own private invitation sent by mail or discussed over the phone and everything like that, it was quite a hassle to get going. And, I mean, just a year or so ago, I actually realized that one of my today's better friends that I have actually won the music compo at that party. And I didn't even know that he was there because I didn't know him then. And I started knowing him a couple of years ago now. So it's just weird world of coincidences. And the same thing in work, because, I mean, I meet a lot of people everywhere and here and there. And I usually have a sort of a Commodore logo. And to be honest, on my Facebook profile picture is a drawing of me that I got from a colleague of mine who's an excellent graphic artist. And so he did a sort of a cartoonish version of me with a Commodore logo on my T-shirt, of course. And when I have that over, people are like, oh, you were into the Commodore and stuff? And then we can actually bounce into a lot of weird people. I even met some old Commodore 64 contacts through work because I just realized, oh, that surname, isn't you that guy? He was like, I've been out of the scene for 30 years. How did you know? Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, and I think that's because of that niche that it was, and that's why we have that hang to those computers, and all these people ended up somewhere that we still sometimes bump into them.
Yeah.
And I think it's because this is kind of going to be a nostalgic ranting episode as well, because that's also what it is, because for me as well, like I have it with the mid-90s, definitely, that kind of feeling of the vibe for like, oh yeah, that was a fun time, and the static is something that you start liking as a kid and formative years, so that makes an impact. And it's the stuff that people always say, it's the stuff that you enjoy, like you form between 15 and 25, and that's all the music that you will always ever listen to, and all the stuff you enjoy will come in that frame and you absorbed it, which is not true, by the way, because I love listening to music that is like new and weird and stupid. So I guess that's also very like broad, but I think it is definitely a truth to it, like that has a big impact on you.
But is there a moment that you think back to that was like when you see a certain demo or hearing a certain track that gives you goosebumps, like that was like my, I don't know, moment when that I associate with something very positive from that time?
Yeah, I think I always put music, demos and music on tapes, especially I remember a holiday in is it like 95, 96, listening to demo scene music, and I have a bunch of songs that became really important because I was listening to them on my Walkman. And music has that part, like we're three musicians here. So it's, and then the people behind the scene are also musicians and coders. Sorry. Gargar just does everything. But that is that music is such a, it can bring you back to a moment. And I think that for a lot of people, like you hear a certain demo and you're there at that party. And I think that is that safe moment. But I've never felt that I want to recapture that moment. In the demo scene, I always wanted to go further and explore more things. The demo scene was cool, and it was like making stuff with computers. And back in 95, that was the limit, so that's what you did. But now it's 2021, and we can do more. And we have that stagnation of people sticking to nostalgia. And I get it with old school platforms, because it's all you can do on it. But then again, it also totally, that's not true.
Was it easier or harder like back then? Because everyone was on the same level and everyone had the same set of rules or set of technology.
Yeah, and I think that people now say like, oh, when you do stuff on a Commodore 64 and it's all, because there's tons of Commodore demos and Amiga demos coming out and Atari demos that are absolutely not old school demos. That are actually not like pandering nostalgia demos. Like, oh, remember this? If anything, I have the feeling if I go to X, I've been to X twice, that the Commodore 64 scene has seen enough fucking side scrollers. Well, they're still there because you still scroll, but they try to like do new things with that Commodore 64. I remember at X 2012, and there was a music compo, and it was like blaring dubstep coming out of the speaker because they were like, enough of the chip tunes. We've heard that sound. And there was this really like love of the machine, but not necessarily of the nostalgia of like, oh yeah, back what we did then. No, we did that then. Now we do this. Now we blow it up, or we break records. And that for me personally is like what I find more interesting in a demo scene than another demo that does the same thing the demos did back in like 1986. Mm. What your take as like really old schoolers is on that? Like,
yeah, actually, reinventing design aspects from demos on old platforms is, I think, is a big plus. I think. I mean, doing. I don't get excited by any lens vectors anymore on an Amiga. Or I mean, you need to redefine probably what you want to do on the platform with the same limitations, but not exactly copy the style of back then. Because I think, to some extent, it happens automatically due to the platform, but you need to. I mean, you can still evolve even though it's an old platform.
Yeah, so there's nostalgia kind of stagnant. And that's what I think is, even like what for a PC demo, like you have a modern PC demo and there's a Commodore 64 logo in it. I know I'm going to call him out on it. He might get really mad at me. I think it was LeGuber that told me, like, if there's old school pandering in a PC demo, it's a point deduction. Because that's just like, it's tacky. It doesn't add anything. And I think there have been demos that did stuff with old school stuff on new school platforms that did it well. But what is your opinion on that personally? Because yeah, I have big opinions, but I hate it as well. Like
But what was the demo from Revision, the arcade, running through the arcades there?
Yeah, it's I don't.
That is clearly hitting for that. Right.
As I hate it is maybe a bit harsh, because I cannot hate on the work. And as I posted on Poet as well, like, the soundtrack is fantastic. I mean, Alchema never goes wrong, and I can't hate on the work, and you can clearly see that there's a lot of love in that production. And they love it, and it's absolutely, but it does nothing for me. Absolutely right. Nothing. I was like a kid in the 80s. It was fine. I still like some things about the 80s, like in a nostalgic way. Like, I love Back to the Future and watch it again every once in a while. But this does nothing for me. Mm-hmm. And if you see that, I'm like, yeah, cool. No, that's nothing wrong with it. Again, I'm calling out that group, and they're going to get really, really mad at me now. Like, keep doing what you're doing, because you're doing your demos for you, and you made a lot of people happy with it. So who am I to say that it sucks? But so that's not what I'm going to say. But it's like, this didn't do anything for me. But how do you guys perceive that when you see a demo in a compo and it's like a new platform, and it's kind of, sometimes you even had these as well at Revision that is like an excuse to make a pretty shitty PC demo. You put like Amiga effects in it, and like, oh, Amiga, I remember that. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. I think that can be done with finesse as well. For instance, one of the first invite demos for Revision, I think it was the first actually, where Vincenzo did the soundtrack. There was just a section in it that was sort of Commodore 64-ish, and the logo turned into that. That kind of touch I like.
Yeah, but that's different. That's an aesthetic touch. That's a shout out, an homage, even, in a demo that does something and says, oh, we remember. Like, I think it's kind of in that way of like the wink of like, we do Commodore and you wink in the music, but that's not, they didn't build it around it. They didn't. No. It's like, oh, there's a Commodore 64 on a PC. Like, why? Why would you do that? I will give a shout out to Winner Demo, because they did a PC demo and they put Commodore shit in it because they were Metal Vatsa. And they did it well, because they didn't give a shit. They just made a PC demo with tons of old school shout outs because that's who they were. Mm. And then it works. Maybe it's super subjective. I don't know.
If it's a concept, it works.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Well, it's also a concept to just do a shitty Amiga demo on a PC because you cannot do anything else.
Yeah, but
I may be making so many people angry right now. I'm so sorry.
Oh my God.
Let's
please send your emails to Oki at.
You guys talk for a little bit. I'll keep quiet for now.
No, but I'm more like for the little touches, the homages, and a reference here and there. That's just great. I'm also not too keen about completely trying to, well, make a PC demo look like a Commodore 64 demo throughout the whole demo. But the other way around, yeah, that could be intriguing as well, trying to make it that way. And I saw there was also, I think, Vincenzo is brought up quite a lot here now, because I think he posted a remake on the Commodore 64 of an old PC demo just a little while back. I'm sorry, I've been way out of everything the last couple of months because it's been crazy at home. But, I mean, that's also a thing. He basically put a video where the demos were running side by side. And that's a nice twist, but it was not in a nostalgic way in that sense. So
well, that's a demake. From Altar did a fantastic demake of a Ziphead by Fairlight on the Atari 2600. Because he found out that the music from Hoffman is in that like horrible Atari 2600 sound register. but he could do the music. And then he just decided to make the demo. And it's really good because it gets really close to the original in vibe. But I think that's a whole different beast because then you're trying to burst out of the constraints from a platform where I think if you have all the power in the world, and maybe that's also the problem, like technology is ever expanding and maybe there's a bunch of people that are super nostalgic about Amiga and didn't really progress much further in their technical because they don't have to. And it's comforting. And I also really get that. So I don't want to say, like, I don't want to speak badly about it. I get that comfort.
Sorry guys, but what's a demake?
A demake is when you remake something on a lesser platform.
Oh, okay.
It became a thing. There was a bunch of indie games that were then demade. There's a guy that did an indie game on a C64.
So Desert Dream on the C64 was basically a demake.
Yeah, it's a demake and so Second Reality on the C64, which is kind of, I find the term kind of derogative because it felt like it's not less, it's actually more because you get it to run on a platform not, like less powerful than the original platform.
Right.
And check out that Ziphead. I think it's called Chiphead by Altar from KK. It's absolutely fantastic. It is because it gets the exact aesthetic right from Ziphead. Everything is in there.
Okay. Cool.
And it's on an Atari 2600. So for nostalgia, like to go back to that, like people might not have kept it and want to make their demos on their Amigas, and that's fine. I think it's also fine. I don't know. I'm conflicted about this.
Right. There's also a pretty fine line between retro and nostalgia, right? I mean, I think it's something that uses an 80s synth, like a music track or something. It's already like retro. Like The Weeknd's current chart hits or whatever you want to call it. There's a big 80s trend going on currently in chart music
for
as well.
For decades.
But yeah, I mean, is that something that, I mean, retro, nostalgia, and doing it the retro way, like in the using methods like back then, or using instruments or design aspects from that, is that the same as nostalgia? Does it appeal to exactly those elements?
It always takes back as that 20 years and 20 year and the 30 year cycle. They say when they talk about something, it always comes back. So in 20 years, the fashion will be inspired by what was hip 20 years ago, which we actually see happen in the Netherlands, that everybody's going to late '90s, early 2000s aesthetic. And in the '90s, it was the '60s and the '70s. And in the '80s, it was the '50s with Happy Days was really popular, and Grease and Back to the Future. That was all fifties, basically nostalgia. So it's to the people that get to a certain age that then long for that age. That always has to do with nostalgia, is a longing for that safer, different time when everything was easy, which is never true. It's always that same thing of like, oh, back in the day, and then music was better back in the day. It's never true. Music was always shit and has been forever. And it was also good music. Like of course, because the music you don't like is the music from the kids, and you like the music from your time, and the kids don't like your music because it's for old people. Yeah, I think it's for the 80s sound, that's actually interesting because it has been happening for a long time now. That like everybody needs a DX7 in their song, and it's like, and you can buy an Alpha Uno. That's more 90s though. But people get that now, like using old synthesizers is really popular again, and they're really expensive now.
So I guess nostalgia fades out the negative aspects of the time that you were experiencing it in the beginning,
yeah,
right?
Definitely. And also there is revivals in music, and I guess in the demo scene is that there's kids making music that sounds like it's from a time they weren't even born yet. That's also the thing that's weird, that it's like a time before you're born, and it feels comfortable because you weren't there. I don't know what that is, but I think for the demo scene, because we're getting to that point of like nostalgia is it's there's nostalgia now for late 90s because that's 20 years ago. 25 years ago. So that's nostalgic to the 90s, is that people are running out making mid-90s demos. I think we see a little bit of that happening. We're getting back to people going to their comfort zone. But I think in the demo scene, it was always pushing the limit.
So now you're getting started, right? Because you're from 95, so you're getting your songs ready for the next compos.
Well, I mean, Boozadrome is a prime example of like absolutely nostalgia pandering. We're making Gabber on Amigas. I mean, I love it. I'm running Fast Tracker on my Windows laptop, which is, when you full screen it, looks ridiculous on my super giant 27-inch high def screen. The pixels are so big. But indeed, it's very comforting for me because I know how it works and I'm very good at it. That's also the thing, is like you're good at the stuff you know from back then.
So why are you doing it? No. Why are you running Fast Tracker on that machine?
Because, well, I have to make a mod for Boosadrome, but because it is comforting, I know how it works. It's still ingrained in my mind, and it gives me the that vibe of when I was a kid. Exactly, when I had all the time to waste, and I make a song, and it's harder now to find the time. But it's absolutely that, because you were on it back then. You had so much more time. You were good at that stuff. And I think for a lot of people, they were good at their stuff. They were known for that. They were showing off at parties. Oh man, the gloating back in the day. It's ridiculous if you read all Discmags now. All these teenagers just calling each other.
I don't know
out.
What you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Zine.
we never did that.
No, but it's fine because you were teenagers. It's part of that world. And I think, I mean, we should go back making Discmags, but I don't think we would write the same things. And then we get back to that. So that's not the nostalgia we're looking for, right? We're not looking for that kind of teenage idiocy.
Actually, I was rereading some of those old, and we had advertisements from other seniors in the Mac. I was rereading some of them because you can find them now on Bitfellas or, but it's horrible. And I was wondering, like, what the fuck did we do back then?
Some stuff is better left in the past. And that's also the thing. If you get stuck in nostalgia, like, not everybody's like, oh, the music from the 80s was great.
Yeah.
But no, there was so much trash.
Did we really publish that for eternity now? Like, when the internet is available now? But, okay, that's that
something
was
we never
horrible,
thought about, right?
Horrible.
Yeah.
That's also the thing with nostalgia. You tend to filter out the bad stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always when you hear today, what's happening with today's society? It was so much better before. Yeah. Yeah. Well, then you're missing this, and this point. So, yeah, that's a tough call.
It's like the grandfather stories of back then when everything, like, you know, your uncle was doing this and that. It was amazing.
Yeah, you long for a time, but that never actually existed because your head is all skewed. Because we should also just absolutely say, like, this is back then. It's also a product of the time. Mm. And you can see it in that context. That's why archiving is very important to say, like, okay, we're not that people anymore, which is also absolutely good to say. There are things I've written on certain websites I'm absolutely ashamed of right now. But yeah, it called me out on them because I would say I was a different person back then. I've learned. I grew. So that is also a different aspect of it. And I'm not saying, because it sounds like it, like people that are wallowing in that nostalgia are going back for that didn't grow, because that's not true. But you feel that if it's comforting for you, like everything else in your world has gone so fast and it's so different right now, that it's so comforting to turn on your Amiga and make a demo. I feel like I'm calling out people with everything I'm saying. This is not personal to anybody. I get it. I do the same. But I also think it stagnates and we keep seeing the same demos over and over and the same things over and over. And that's what makes me sometimes so annoyed that I see a demo that does the same effect again. I'm like, I love you made a demo, always do, but really, like, at least put a spin on it, do something different. And I think maybe that's happening as well. We see spins on old effects and definitely the old school scene. Like, the old school, they do the most impressive and weird stuff because that's what they want to do. They still push those limits.
Yeah, everything has been done on those old platforms already, you think, and then they come up with something new.
And that's the interesting part of how much of that is nostalgia, how much is TBL making their old work in video games. Let's just generalize that out of this. Mm-hmm. And they all work on state-of-the-art technology during the day, and they come home and they fire up their Amiga, which is nostalgia because it's something from their youth, and then they start making insane shit on it that we haven't seen before. So it's that weird, like, paradox, basically.
What I was wondering about TBL actually was something that, I mean, you see them at least I see them at parties like every, like, 10 years or something. And are those guys actually putting the Amiga to the side and then just doing game stuff? And then, like, 10 years later, they think, okay, let's just put those things over on the Amiga and do something again? Or are they constantly doing something on the Amiga every now and then, and you know, keeping in the loop, because I don't know anything about them.
What I've heard is constantly is that especially it was for Louis and for Calms especially as well. He was like sick. He actually left game coding as well now, but he was like sick and tired of coding shaders the whole day, coming home coding Amiga in the bus or in the train home on a notebook in an emulator coding Amiga. And because that's the release, and it's inherently nostalgic because it's the computer from your youth, but it's absolutely not nostalgic what they were making Or is it because they were making a demo? So, bah, nostalgia.
So they're constantly in the loop of the same technology, like throughout the years, but only releasing something like every
demos for years because they also have careers and families. Yeah, sure, I mean, Eon was in development for like 4 years.
Built up a whole tool chain around it as well.
Yeah.
So
we have some young people in as well that now that they converted the code for Amiga. I remember this. Eon, I was told, was like at Scene Event when E-Moon bumped into Hoffman and they were like, we should do something together. And then years later, they make a demo. It takes them a really long time to finish their product. Also because, as Rubber once told me, we only enter if we know we're going to win. That's that TBL arrogance, right?
Of course.
So when it's not finished, I remember the revision. They were working on a demo and it was supposed to be released and I was super excited. And then Rubber came up like, no, not releasing it. Not good enough. And they released a year later.
I think it was Rift, yes.
Yeah, it was Rift. And they released it. It was the year before that it was teased. And then the year that it was supposed to be released was not, it's not done yet. Mm. And then they released it a year later. So they really, and that's also, you see that with the C64 groups as well, that they release at X because they have 2 years to make a demo. And then we have the other like retro parties where people put a lot of time in it and they take a lot of time because we have families. So it's that.
It was the same with the winning Amiga demo at this year's Eurovision. I don't remember the name, but Xerxes made the music.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but I saw a preview like the year before, like at Revision, they wanted to release it and they showed me the preview of that and they didn't want to release it like that. So they polished it for a year. From good to great. I think that's worth investing the time, right? What do you think is the difference between paying homage and referencing something? Is that something, because I was thinking about it earlier today, is an homage something that is style driven? But not exactly copying something, and the reference is an element of something that you exactly using the same way as it was in the original? Or how do you interpret those terms?
I mean, the textbook example you just brought up, so I guess. I mean, an homage is more like, let's celebrate this, whatever, old stuff. But I think that there are more referential things. It was what I was talking about, the Vincenzo thing, for instance, because that was a reference, a pure reference, I think. So I think there is a difference.
Maybe a homage as well, maybe a wink towards the Commodore. Yeah. And I think that's, if it's done, it's an homage is, and I think that is homages.
Tribute.
When you appropriate the style as an aesthetic, I think, so shouting out Raz, because I heard his feelings the other day, that he does that. Raz's demos are definitely in a retro vibe.
Yeah.
But they don't feel pandering because they're homaging that style. He does his own thing in that style.
With new technology, mostly? Or?
Yeah, new technology. Yeah. And I think that's where you wink back at the past and you say, like, I see what you've given us, but we've built upon it.
Mm.
We've changed it. I think that's a good homage. And you see them, I try to think of another one, that like that wink of the Commodore bit that you do and that you have that shout out, but then there's that blatantly putting an Amiga ball in your demo. And you're like, remember this? I call it the Ready Player One effect. Don't get me started on that book. I think it's the worst book I've ever read. Personal opinions. But it's that like, just for remembering sake. Just that like, that's the thing. And that's like an homage is like, we shout you out because you gave us something.
So what's the guest poet a cappella thing from Revision, or was it Revision, right? With the three Amigas doing a cappella tracks.
I don't want to say mean things, so I'm going to give this to Sifoy.
That was probably an homage in that sense for me, I guess. It was definitely nudging towards, because he really enjoyed the original soundtracks. That's why he made it, I guess, if I recall it correctly. But it's an acquired taste, to say it like that.
Right. And, so Oki goes for the crowd pleaser.
Yeah, no, because as I said, it's like, I think actually you're right. And there's a set aside of what my personal preferences, and I love Gus Bode. He's like a super talented guy and he's a super dedicated guy. Like he uses his, but then he makes something and I'm like, It's again, because I didn't have anything with the Amiga like that, so it doesn't do anything for me, which is fine, I'm not the target audience. But it borders the corny territory, I think. But I think what it did really well, because everybody was like, the simple set, like, oh, this was a lovely trip back. I think, okay, then you just achieved your goal. And yeah. Again, who am I to tell you, like, oh, now it's crap.
Like, I liked you. It, and to be honest. Yeah. I liked it.
But that's our era, right? Sifoid. Yeah. It's like... You remember the tracks and you go, it's like, oh my God, that's so beautiful.
You call it an error. You call it like it's wrong. It's not wrong. No, but I think it's fine to enjoy something nostalgically and to make something nostalgically. Mm. But are we afraid we're getting stuck in nostalgia and that's the only thing that that lives?
Actually, I'm really, like, sometimes I got really worried about can I enjoy today's scene the same way as I could back then? Because you keep going through your nostalgic thoughts, but you know, that was so awesome, so awesome. But now, like I said before, like when I look back at 2006, now the stuff that we made right then, you start to have the same feelings again for those kind of productions you made. So I think it's something that probably goes on and on to different always. Points in time in the past, right? So,
and again, you can always enjoy whatever you enjoy. I mean, don't have anybody ever tell you you're enjoying something wrong. I mean, that is just the biggest nonsense ever. But, the point is about the demo scene is like, what are we, like, does it stagnate, the demo scene? And I think sometimes I think it does, and then sometimes I think it doesn't. Then I see, like, sometimes I feel like, oh, it's just a bunch of old school crap. And then the old school scene makes stuff that's blowing my mind because it's actually pushing it forward. I'm like, no, that's not what I mean. I mean, and like the pandering, but is it even bad if you pander to people and they love it, like, and they really enjoy it, like that arcade demo won revision, so good for them. Like, it's if people enjoy it, it's fine. But I think for me is I love the demo scene in the pushing the limits and seeing what further we can do. And I have the feeling sometimes that there's a bunch of people that just want to stay in the 80s forever.
I mean, I think we need to have a bit of everything there as well. I mean, let some people stay forever. And if that's their comfort zone and they feel like happy, as you say, if it pleases you, if it makes you happy, then go for it by all means. But there also has to be some sort of progress, as you also mentioned, because I do enjoy the newer stuff. And the occasional flashback to the old days. But still, I feel like I don't want to get stuck in the past in that sense, but I immensely enjoy the occasional pop-up of a feeling back how it was. Like on Facebook, these posts with the old party pictures, for instance, like, I remember that. That's me. And really, that made me feel great for a little while. And then I just went on. In a few years, that same picture will pop up again. It's like, hey, do you remember this party in another group somewhere on Facebook? I mean, that's the usual story for us old boomer kind of.
And you go in a group like, oh, remember, what was his name again? I remember him very well. His mommy, and his mom was great. Yeah. She would drive us, and we go to that level of nostalgia.
So let's take a picture of ourselves recording this thing that we can look back at it in 20 years and go, oh my God, look at that
beard.
But also,
I think, indeed, you should never deny yourself indeed your nostalgia, because it was a great time and you should feel like warm and fuzzy about certain things. Absolutely. I think people always go like, oh, you let go of the past, like it's only the future. It's like, sure, but I think do it in measures. Like, don't, if you only live in the past, then you never see what the future will bring, and more motivational poster speech. Sometimes I'm worried of, like, the demo scene doesn't give me any more what I liked in the demo scene when I joined, because that was always pushing those limits, and then I'm proved completely wrong, and I'm super happy. So I think we don't have to worry, but I think we should be conscious for it, like that we're not getting trapped inside the nostalgia. And
do you think people like who are more nostalgic are more reluctant to change or more open to change, either in, I don't know, private life, jobs, whatever? Because I find it, or is that an age thing actually in general? Like, the older you get, the less you want things to change, because I'm actually starting to feel like my mom, like, oh my God, a new phone now or something. And then you go, oh, am I supposed to buy my ticket online now for the tramway or whatever? So I'm starting to feel like that. I'm like, oh my God, I'm old.
I always felt I was forefront, but I feel the same sometimes now. And Ziffert is the oldest here, I think, so he knows the best.
Well, I mean, to be honest, if it wouldn't have been for the previous me, I wouldn't have been what I am and where I am today. And yeah. It was extremely noticeable now because I've actually started on a sort of a class or a course for a half a year now where I'm going to be an IT systems architect, blah, blah, blah. And this is a big difference, a different thing for me because I've never really studied. I went to high school, yes, but during those years, that was mid-80s. What was I doing mid-80s? Well, the demo scene, I found that one. School was just not interesting at all. So it feels great now to actually get back into school, get back into cell, and then for the first time learn how to study because I've never been knowing how to study. But then again, I wouldn't have been where I am today unless I spent all those hours at the computer. So it's like, yeah, I can appreciate that life in another fashion now when I sit myself down in the school bench again and then see like, oh, perhaps I should have done this back then. But then if I would have done so then, how would my life be then? So it's like sort of a...
I also love that for you because it's an awesome experience to actually get that experience to study again. And even though it might be really hard, but it's awesome. It's a good thing. And I think it's also that thing to like aspire from what it taught you. I think that's for a lot of people as well. The demo scene taught them a lot and shaped them as people. Like definitely did for me. Like I got jobs through the demo scene. I know so many people through the demo scene that in the end, the rest of my life was so handy. And I never realized that when I joined, when I was like this fresh-faced 13-year-old going, this is fun, computers, make computer go beep. And then now it's like high-tier game industry people and movie people. You go like, damn, that actually it gave me that. And that is so, I'm definitely nostalgic and happy for that. And that's the thing. I also don't think that is what we were looking for, is that definitely be happy about your past. But I think be careful to like, don't even be careful, do what you want, but reevaluate why you're doing it, I guess.
And I guess this nostalgic part is not something that is just like in the demo scene where, I mean, people listening to Pink Floyd albums from, I don't know, Dark Side of the Moon era or whatever, that's the same aspect of thinking back to a concert that you experienced back then or thinking to a movie you saw at a certain time, in a certain point in time. I think it's probably all comes down to that.
I'm still in the stage where how to learn to handle the new tools, because when I have the world open, because I can do basically anything, then I can't do nothing because I don't know where to start. That's easier with a tracker, like with pre-tracker or whatever, going back to goat tracker and stuff like that. You have the limitations. You know that if I tweak those numbers, then I have a sound like that. That's comfort.
It's comfort. And you say easy and then say goat tracker in one sentence. Yeah. This is something that's not possible. Because if there's one thing not easy, it's goat tracker.
Well, I've made music in way worse things. So that's...
For people that don't know, listening to this podcast, goat tracker is a Commodore 64 sequencer. Making music on the Commodore 64 is like Byzantine hell summoning. And it's actually a really good tracker, is what I've been told by C64 musicians. Because before that, you were typing in hexadecimal codes. And that maybe also the thing is, it's insane ways to make music, and now there are plugins to emulate old chiptune sounds from the Commodore, because kids have no idea how it works. Nostalgia is lost on them as well. They don't know how hard it was, and the reason why we do it is comforting.
Yeah.
That's actually, I think, Sifford, you need to, I don't know, there was a message that popped up yesterday, actually, when I... Because a year ago, I started making music again on Bitwig, on a different platform that was completely new to me. And I was in touch with Xerxes and Ultrasit at the same time back then because they taught me stuff. And I saw a post that I made a year ago that I started making music again. And he said, well, you progressed so fast. And I said, well, I didn't do much yet. And he said, you learned a new tool, you looked up some tutorials, you started to select instruments, you started to write some melodies, you did progress faster than I thought that you would, because, and that is part of the process. And reading that message yesterday from someone who's passed away in the meantime was something that like completely got to me, and like here I am a year later, and you did some stuff in the like in that year. So you need, I think, to see for you, if you start doing those little steps, like with, I don't know, if it's just watching one tutorial a day, like of a certain segment, how you can do something in the new tool, there's already a small step to addressing these things, and I think that leads to progress in the end, I think. So
I mean, just do. That's the thing. Not think too much. Yeah. Just do. I mean, it's a lovely
sentiment to have to share, Axel. Thank you.
Yeah,
it was really beautiful to actually share that.
Yeah, and I mean, Ultra said yes, we miss him definitely.
Yeah,
progress is made by doing. No matter what you do, actually, it's just.
I'm actually like you. Like I always think should I really try this or should I really do this? And then when you're done, you can actually say, well, okay, it was either it's crap, but you did it, or it turned out good, or you can actually learn from that, or you can learn a lesson for the next time or whatever. But I think actually getting started to actually do something is the hardest part instead of then recording stuff later on. But I think actually getting the decision to do it is the hard part, and find thousands of excuses for not starting. And I think that's the dangerous part.
Yeah, it also connects to now starting to study again, because I'm at this position where I know too much for being a complete noob, and I know too little to know it all. And this is the impatient part of me, because the same thing with music. I know a lot when it comes to music, but there's also so much that I don't know. And it's almost like if you have a book, you should read it from A to Z. And then you know that you've, worked through A to F already. Should you then skip to G, or should you actually reread A to F? And it's just getting into that process. So what I'm actually, my dear friend Alpa, he's helping me get going with music again. So he said, okay, so from October, make one loop per week.
Right.
It doesn't really matter what it is. The target is, it needs to be 4 bars or more in any tool, really. And it needs to have at least 2 instruments.
It's good.
Yeah. And just try to get to do something. And the problem here is that I have a problem. I have so much unreleased stuff, but I never get to release it because I'm too self-conscious, and I have the imposter syndrome problem all the time when it comes to making music. And that's the problem. You just need to do, no matter what the outcome is.
What did you do differently back then? Like Delicate Sound of Razor times, why did you release those songs? Were they finished? Were you happy with them? Were you more confident of releasing them back then?
Well, not really. The only thing is that I did it in one sitting because I knew the tool so well. So all the tracks that I did back then basically have been done within 2 or 3 hours tops. That's also the thing with the tracks that
Screw you, man, because those were awesome. I was working on songs for weeks, and those were like, did it a sitting of 2 or 3 hours.
That's music making. Is like some people just like, you shake your arm a little bit and pull it out.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know how we ended up here, but I think it's a lovely note to end on is like, and especially the thing that Axel shared is like, don't think you didn't do anything. Everything you did is progress. Every step you made there, and as your voice with Ziphoid, is like, make a loop, and that's already progress. That's already getting you in that mindset. And I think that is our message at the end of this episode about nostalgia. Just make progress.
Yeah.
And keep doing. And if you want to do something nostalgic, do. Just do.
I can't
be mad. Even if I'm mad at a party edit, I'm not mad because you did something. And that's the most important thing. And I think we should. Is there anything else you guys want to add?
No, I think you just closed it perfectly.
Yeah, but when it comes to just one thing here, when it says the only way we get progress is just to do, so that's what we need you guys who are listening to this to help us make progress. You need to do something, and that's to mail some suggestions of what we should talk about, because we need to have help to do as well.
And also thanks to those who actually sent something last time, because we got in touch with some people who might help us on future episodes. So thanks a lot for those. Actually, some really interesting people there. That should be interesting to move on.
Really unexpected. So
that was
Stevie Wonder and President Obama. So I don't know, but thank you. No, we had some good people. Yeah, some good people shouting out. But we can always use, more is better, because then we don't have to, they don't have to carry all the load.
Because otherwise we think back to the first episode and then we go nostalgic on that, and we don't want that, right? So we need to move on that.
I think we're wrapping it up perfectly.
Yep.
So send us questions on zionradioshow@scene.org. And I think I'm going to wrap it up. This show was hosted by Oki, Axel, and Ziphoid. It was produced, mixed, and edited by Gloom and Gargai. They're currently on a bus that explodes if the Amiga on it renders less than 60 sprites per second. Special thanks to Team.org, SceneSat, and BitFellas. Send your questions and feedback to zionradioshow@scene.org or contact us on our Zion Radio Show Discord. If you like the show, please share it with your friends and give us a positive rating as well. You can find the Zion Radio Show on SceneSat as well as Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. And see you again next time for episode 17. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Retro. Mm-hmm.